You're listening to Collaboration's coverage of the 2016 Los Angeles Asian Pacific Film Festival. Welcome back to our interview series. Our next interview is with the filmmaker of Rebel with a Cause, The Life of Aizel Herzig Yoshinaga. We talk with the director, Janice Tanaka, about the life of Aizel, what led her to create this film, and her experiences coming up as an Asian American filmmaker, and one of the only minority filmmakers in her school. So here's my interview with Janice. All right, I'm here with Janice Tanaka. Janice D. Tanaka?
Yes.
Okay. The director of Rebel with a Cause, a documentary showing this year at the 2016 LA Asian Pacific Film Festival. Yes. Welcome, Janice.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about your film.
Well, the Rebel with a Cause, Rebel with a Cause is a life story of Aizel Herzig Yoshinaga. She is what we call a community treasure in the Japanese American community. She's now 92. She was critical and instrumental in the redress movement, especially during the times of the Commission on Wartime Relocation and Internment of Civilians, in doing research and in finding papers that implicated the government in a cover-up to incarcerate Japanese Americans during World War II. So, you know, I think her life story kind of reflects this whole notion of, you know, women activists, you know, women's stories, and how even though they're not at the forefront, they're not the people that are written in the history books, that their life story and their work can impact so many people's lives and the change history. Yeah. So I hope people come and meet Aizel, see Aizel in the film.
Is she coming out to the screening?
She will be at the screening at JANM, or Japanese American National Museum, on Tuesday at 4:30. Unfortunately, she won't be at the downtown independent screening.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, how long have you been following Aizel's life?
Well, the ironic thing is I found out through Aizel later in the process of making the film that she and my mother were best friends from when they were 8 years old till when they were 17.
Wow.
So at 17 is the age they were supposed to graduate in the summer of 1942, and they were denied their diplomas by their LA high school principal. So Aizel and my mother didn't get their diplomas. Like, they got an equivalency GED or something, you know, like that. But Aizel actually had to go back to school to get her diploma finally in New York. But, you know, I think that was sort of the impetus that here, my mother, who's a little bit more conservative, more on the quiet side, more on the don't make waves side, had a best friend that is such a rebel rouser and such a person who, you know, sort of stuck to their guns. And she's going to kill me for saying this, but she was the first Nisei woman that I could approach and say, well, you had a baby in camp. How did you have sex in those barracks, and how did that happen? And she was honest and forthright about those kind of very day-to-day issues that I was always curious about. So I thought, boy, she is one amazing person. No one's done her life story yet, so why not? And it turns out, she had more famous people in her family. Warren Fudutani is her son-in-law, and her daughter, Jerry Miyazaki, the daughter that was born in camp, she goes on to be one of the first Asian stars on Broadway. She was in the world of Susie Wong after France Nguyen left with Marlon Brando to explore the world. So Jerry's story is also interesting. So it was just kind of a good biopic to do because of the nature of who she was, and that people love her. She's kind of an icon, kind of a hero in our Japanese American community. And I wanted to extend her story to the broader Asian American community, but also to the world. So I'm here.
So what are you hoping that the audience will get from the story of Aizel?
Because the Nisei, you know, as you know, the veterans and also that whole generation that were in camp, they're all passing these days. So this is our last chance to honor and recognize and cherish the days that we have left with the few Nisei that, you know, really experienced camp at a high level. You know, the guys that are in their 80s, they were little children, but the impact of a 18-year-old was enormous. It, you know, the whole camp, she spent 1,145 days in camp, had a child there, her father died there. It really changed her life trajectory. So I just want people to come and, you know, meet her, say hello, say their thanks, say, you know, really give her her just due story and rewards and keep it for posterity, yeah. Really.
So what's the plan for after the LA Asian Film Festival?
Right now, the film rights are in negotiation, so we're not sure what's going to happen. But again, I'm just glad I had an opportunity to save that story before it disappeared forever. So, you know, on one level, it's good that it's going to be premiering here. It's out. The community can see it. And I'm not sure what's going to happen. Okay. But, you know, I also think that people like her and the lesson of her life story is relevant today because of all of the anti-Muslim things that are happening. And everybody, a lot of the reporters here are asking about the Japanese-American story's relevance to that story today. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I was so proud of the community after San Bernardino to come out and have a candlelight vigil here at the Japanese-American National Museum. But I'm really, really, really the last of the sansei, I guess, filmmakers who are still kind of working in this area of preserving history. So it's at least preserved and maybe presented, you know, in wider outlets later.
So how long have you been making films for?
I was telling some guy back there that I actually went to USC Film School in the 70s. And I think I opened the one Daily Trojan one day, and it says there were 5 women out of 500 in the film school. And I'm going, oh, God, I must be one of those, and the rest are white, so I must be the only minority white non-white woman in the film school.
So you were a trailblazer.
Well, I don't know if I'm a trailblazer because, you know, at the point that I graduated, also, there was no entree into Hollywood. It was still kind of blocked, even with the connections that we had through the professors and through the school. George Lucas was just making his way. Zemeckis was just making his way. Ron Howard was making their way. They were making their own paths. And then, you know, they would later change the whole dynamic. But I went into corporate video and marketing and sales for Transamerica. But then after the LA riots in 92, that also changed my trajectory because I said, this is terrible. You know, LA explodes in a race riot again. I lived through the 65 riots. Now I live through 92. So I said, I want to make a life change. I want to explore the rest of the country. So I taught at Indiana University and the University of Florida. And I just think that was a good thing to do. Because you get kind of complacent in LA. It's very diverse. I can eat all the Asian food I want. I have, you know, Latino friends. I have black friends. It, you know, it's so different a dynamic here. So I just think exploring the world was good. And also being a filmmaker at the time that I was, it's just different. You know, I was lucky to get a CLEF grant to do a film about sansei suicides that happened during the 70s. And that sort of was a landmark film because it was the first to explore how camp affected our generation. And yeah, 30 kids, 1 year, just all either OD'd, hung themselves, did some very self-destructive behavior, but it was reflected on, they had no identity. They had no reason to live because they felt that they had no futures. So, I don't know. I come and make documentaries, and I've done marketing in between, and it's fun to be back in the film world right now.
I mean, it's great to see you, this documentary, these Asian American stories that span, because, you know, a lot of, you know, the current, you know, I guess pop culture of Asian American film is still very young, still very new, but, you know, the Japanese American story spans back almost a century, like a little more than, like, so that's awesome. So what, for our listeners who want to be like you,
make films and things like that.
Don't do it.
We get that a lot, but
no, you know, one of the things that has changed radically is the technology. And I must admit, when I went to film school, the cameras weighed about 200 pounds and the light kits weighed another 100 pounds. And so they were, you know, the guys were just looking for the women to fail because they couldn't lift the cameras and they couldn't, there was very one maybe cinematographer woman, you know, but it was hard for her. And I think now with everything coming down to a DSLR, I said, I can lift this. I can actually shoot these things and get great images. And the technology has improved filmmaking in general, but it gives everybody a reason to talk to their parents. You know, be who you are, understanding your own identity, whether you're, Irish, Italian, you know, Japanese, Korean, Filipino, Chinese, whatever it is that you are. Find out about your stories and collect them because this is America and this is what we're all about. In fact, a lot of times I'm seeing now this very similar path that Vietnamese had because they had one tragic event, which was the boat, the boat people years, and they all tied their identity to that time. And you're seeing now a Vietnamese American won the Pulitzer Prize. Amazing. It's so amazing that their story also kind of resonates till today. And they were kind of, I've talked to Vietnamese, same thing happened. I talked to 20, 30-year-olds. Oh, no, my parents are just now talking about their experience during the 70s. And I go, really? But it's hard for the older folks.
But
so.
Also much like the internment camp thing, very relevant today because of the refugee crisis and things like that. So,
yes. Yeah. And the anti-Muslim sentiment too. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone here has, like I said, asked about that. And I go, I think Aiko's story particularly, she's one person that says the Patriot Act still contains a clause where you can still detain somebody, arrest somebody, incarcerate somebody based on national security. So that thing is not gone. And, you know, we have to be ever vigilant that people, because they have a headscarf, you know, are suspects. So that's not right.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Janice's movie is called Rebel with a Cause, not the Marlon Brando movie. and it's premiering here at the LA Asian Pacific Film Festival. Is there any place online where people can get more information?
I have a Facebook page, Rebel with a Cause. I'm sorry. I'm not a tweeter. I'm in another gen.
check it out. Hopefully you can find news for any future screenings if you missed the one at the LA Asian Film Festival. But thank you so much for talking with
us.
Thank you. And imparting your advice and giving your perspective. It was a lot of fun.
And I said, go collaboration.
Great organization.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And that was our interview with Janice Tanaka, filmmaker of Rebel with a Cause, The Life of Aiko Herzig Yoshinaga. You can find more information on where this documentary will be screening, as Janice said, on their Facebook page. We hope you've been enjoying these interviews with the filmmakers at the LA Asian Pacific Film Festival. If you have any thoughts or feedback, please send us a tweet or comment on the comments below. And that's it for this segment. We still got a few more to go, so please stay tuned on collaboration.org to keep updated on our new content. I'm Marvin Uy for collaboration.org, and thanks for listening.